Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
We have an issue. We have a crisis in this country. At least we look at it as a crisis. And I wonder how our guest sees it. And the crisis is our energy sector. It doesn't have to be. We've often said that we have massive energy resources, and it could be a tremendous boon to our country, to our economy. And it could help fuel the sectors where there's great concern about their viability, sustained viability. Healthcare, let's start with that. Hundreds of thousands of surgeries postponed. And we've talked to presidents of the Canadian Medical Association about that as recently as last weekend. And just fuel if you try to stop off for your gasoline or diesel purchases. It's massively expensive, but we have such tremendous resources. So the McDonald Laurier Institute released a paper, the headline of which is Canada's Resource Sector, Protecting the Golden Goose. And it's co-authored by Jack Mintz, distinguished fellow at MLI. Dr. Mintz has been a guest on this program. Philip Cross is the other co-author, senior fellow at MLI. And Mr. Cross is a former chief economist, economics analyst at Statistics Canada. And he's been a guest on this program as well. Mr. Cross, thank you very much for taking the time. Can we just start at the beginning and with part of the headline, Protecting the Golden Goose? Would you identify for us, please? I've tried to do it. I haven't done a good job. What comprises the golden goose, and why in the name of common sense are we not protecting it?
Well, that is exactly what the paper aims to do. It identifies the natural resource sector in this country as the primary industries, you know, farming, mining, oil and gas, utilities. Almost half of manufacturing in this country is based on processing resources like smelting and refining and so on. But the real question is, you know, given the obvious importance of the resource sector, and by the way, energy is the biggest part of the resource sector. The resource sector in this country is large, but energy is nearly half of all the resource sectors. So but the question then becomes, well, given the obvious importance of resources to our economy, why don't we do a better job of encouraging and fostering their development? And it's a real head scratcher. You look at the U.S. and their attitude to resources is quite different than here. They understand that developing resources gives you the money to invest in other things, including technology industries, as well as the healthcare and the government services that you mentioned that we all enjoy. So it's a bit of a wonder about why we are so apologetic or defensive about the resource sector. And it's not just me saying that. I mean, I quote Jim Prentice, the late premier of Alberta, as well as Derek Burney, who was Brian Mulroney's chief of staff. They both noted that, you know, resources have a bad image in this country. And it's time we got over that.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine that most countries that do not have the resources we have, the energy resources, would feel blessed if they had a portion of what Canada possesses. And we are so well positioned to take care of our needs by properly and intelligently and ethically addressing I don't want to say mining necessarily, because there we go. People send emails saying you use the word mining. It's a bad word. But taking advantage of our resources in order to protect the way of life and the needs and requirements of the Canadian population. Yes. We couldn't possibly be a better position, could we?
Yeah. No, and the importance of resources and especially energy to a society were underscored after Russia invaded Ukraine.
Yeah.
You now see Europe backtracking left and right. All of a sudden, those nuclear plants they were going to mothball and the oil and gas industries they were going to run away from, all of a sudden, they realized just how desperately they needed those. They were begging Joe Biden to and Prime Minister Trudeau to increase exports because, you know, they had a critical need for it in the immediate aftermath. So, you know, sometimes you have to have something taken away from you before you realize its critical importance. But Europe, and especially Germany, they had based their whole energy strategy was based on cheap natural gas from Russia. And they now have to completely rethink that. And it's going to lead to a complete reorganization of their economic structure and probably their politics, because the parties that are currently in power, you know, their devotion to renewable and green energy just doesn't work once you take away cheap Russian gas.
What's the greatest obstacle we've placed in our own path to properly, effectively, again, and to the benefit of Canadians, address our natural resources and make them available to the world, sell them to the world, or apply them in some way that is most beneficial to us? Is it the regulatory environment?
I think at this point, obviously the regulatory, you know, the government just will not issue permits for pipelines developed out west, for natural gas terminals on the east coast that we can export to Europe. So it's easy to point at government regulatory policies and say that's the problem. But I think, you know, what we're arguing in the paper is the problem's even deeper than that. It's about how Canadians talk about their resource sector and think about their resource sector. And as long as we're defensive about it, as long as we think that it's hindering our development instead of boosting it, you know, we're going to be reluctant. It's no surprise that governments follow that reluctance. We have to think of the resource sector as an engine of growth, as a source of dynamism. You look at the Alberta economy, is, you know, despite all its current troubles, is probably still the most dynamic and innovative economy in Canada. Why is that? Because of the importance, I would argue a large part of it is because of the importance of agriculture and energy. These industries foster people to think independently, to be self-reliant, to build up savings for the inevitable bad times when they come, to advocate for free trade. These are all the policies and ways of thinking that economists identify as being good for investment and innovation. You know, we didn't realize when we wrote this paper that just as it came out, the Bank of Canada was going to ring the bell and say, you know, lack of innovation is, quote, an emergency, a break the glass.
Yeah, exactly.
When the Bank of Canada starts talking about that, you know, we really have to rethink about, and by the way, if we're going to talk about productivity and investment, there's no better place to start than the resource and especially the energy sector. These have the highest rates of highest levels of productivity and of investment of any sector in the economy. So if you want to rebuild investment and productivity, the resource sector and especially energy would be a really good place to start.
So I've said a number of times on this program, I've read what I read initially, and, you know, peripherally we understand, but you're an economist and you have a deeper understanding of what this actually means to Canadians when the OECD says that we are among advanced countries going to be the worst performing as far as GDP is concerned. First, they said from 2020 to 2030, and then they just had a little more fun with us and said, oh, we might as well extend that out to 2060. When I read that, it's very concerned, very deeply concerning. Could you provide context to what the OECD is saying about how this will affect Canada and Canadians?
Well, I think, you know, what they're saying is based on the current trajectory, if we continue with the current policies, this is where we're going to end up. We're going to end up in last place in growth in the OECD. But there's nothing inevitable about that. We do control our own destiny to a considerable extent. We can adopt policies that encourage more investment in productivity gains. We can have more, better health care and more investment in education. I mean, you know, all these things are possible, but it's going to require a change of attitude. If we keep doing what we've been doing for the last decade, then we're going to end up in last place. And, you know, that's a scary prospect. You know, we live right next door to the most productive, innovative economy in the world, in the United States. And if we continue to spin our wheels, I don't know how we're going to keep young people here. I mean, if you can go and set up a business in the U.S. and there's a free trade deal with Canada and you can export back into Canada, if you can find somebody here with the income to buy your product, why wouldn't you do that? So I think we have to realize, you know, we don't have, we're not entitled to any, to our standard of living. We have to work for it. We have to be, invest in it. We have to be innovative. And we have to establish economic growth as an important goal.
Mr. Cross, we just have a few minutes left, and I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this and putting it in terminology that we can understand. When you and Professor Mintz were going through all of the material which led to the paper that people can read, what surprised you particularly, and part B of this question is, so you've sounded the alarm now, and I think it's a very significant alarm that's been sounded by you both. Do you expect action, or will we just continue to, you know, torture the golden goose?
Well, I don't think this paper by itself, like any paper, is going to turn things around. I think what it does, though, is just contribute to this growing conversation, growing acknowledgement. I think you see it very widespread in the commentariat these days that we are in a growth crisis in this country. And I think the Bank of Canada's statement that it's a break-the-glass type of emergency, I think really drew a lot of attention to that. But I think people have been, you know, understanding that that's the road we're going down. You cited all kinds of other studies. You know, the OECD says we're going to be last for 30 years. And, you know, there have been all kinds of warnings over the, especially over the last year or two, that we, it seems that we've really gone into the ditch. This country's economy has gone completely off the rails. And we have to fundamentally rethink. We can't just tinker with a little policy here and change a regulation there. We really do have to rethink how we talk about and approach the overall economy, of which the resource sector is one of the biggest parts. So I don't think the paper by itself is going to turn things around, but I think hopefully it will just add to it just adds to and a growing awareness of people, and hopefully it'll be discussed during the election in the next year. And, you know, hopefully we'll have a good discussion about all these issues, and we'll think better about the importance of the economy and within that, the importance of resources to our economy.
Because time is finite, right?
Very much so. And if we keep dawdling on these matters, you know, we're going to wake up one day and realize that, you know, a lot of our most innovative and productive younger workers have decided to go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And once that happens, it's going to be very hard to reverse, to bring them back and reverse things in this country.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.